Our focus today is going to be on Tkiyas Shofar. So we take a minute as we settle in and think about the experience of Tkiyas Shofar. We think about standing in that moment, which we have, of course, this entire month of Elul, but the Shofar in Rosh Hashanah obviously is different, and the experience is different for many of us. During these weeks, you know, the Tkiyas Shofar in the morning, you know, the post Shachris after Slichas, like, are we awake yet? Are we not awake? Like, but on Rosh Hashanah, we're all in. We are very focused. We have Tkiyas Demiyushav, the initial Tkiyas. We have Tkiyas Demu'umad. And when we hear that sound, for many of us, it is a deep and introspective moment. And that's a long-standing tradition. So what are some of the themes? I'm just curious, because different people have different experiences, different associations. But in halacha, what would you say are your associations when you hear the Tkiyas Shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Where does it bring you back to? Or what does it conjure up in your mind?
Malchus,
the coronation of the Ribono Shel Olam. Ur Yishenim, wake up. Like the Rambam says in Hilchos Shuvah. So these are, if you look on the first page, in the first Maror Mokom, the first source, this is a classic machzor, old school machzor called the Machzor Rabbah. So in the Machzor Rabbah, right before the Tkiyas, they list for you 10 associations, 10 themes that go with Tkiyas Shofar. So of course, the first one, you mentioned that this was the first day, Zeh Ayom Tchilas Ma'asecha, meaning for Adam Arishon, so this was the day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. And we are Mamlech Hashem, so we blow. Later, you mentioned the idea of tshuva, of reminding us of fear. Where is that? That is number... Number two. This is based on Rav Sadia Gaon, so you're talking about over 1,000 years of tradition of what people are thinking about on Rosh Hashanah, reminding us this first day of Aser Simei Tshuva. What else does it remind us of? You can cheat, it's okay.
Moshiach
Tzidkenu, Tchiyas HaMesim, that's what he puts down, Chi, Ha'inyan HaChi, of Bayom Ahu Yishaka, Yitaka B'Shofar Gadol, Bo'a Ovdim. There will be a Kibbutz Golios, Moshiach Tzidkenu, Tchiyas HaMesim, is number 10. What else does it remind us of?
I think of the one right above that, number 8.
Which is?
The Yom HaDin.
Yom HaDin. We have a tradition. The Gemara has different opinions when a person is judged. It sounds like from the Rambam, a person is judged every year on Rosh Hashanah, and then when we go for the final ultimate judgment, then there's an opinion that we also get judged for Tchiyas HaMesim. But so these are all feelings. These are all associations that a person may have when they experience, when they feel that reverberation through us of Tkiyas Shofar. But perhaps there's another, maybe that we haven't thought about, another association, another experience of Tkiyas Shofar that can help us experience Rosh Hashanah in a very deep and profound way that I want to explore together with you. And to do that, to appreciate that, I want to go back to a different time, a different tkufa, which you would not necessarily associate with Rosh Hashanah in any way. It was a tkufa, I was not there, I was not even alive. But apparently, there was such a thing, there was a phenomenon, it wasn't just an event, it was a phenomenon, and you just have to say one word, and it has a lot of associated things with it. It's called Woodstock. I get some nods. So this was a music festival, but it wasn't Stam a music festival. It was a cultural phenomenon. It was the culmination of a very tumultuous period in America with a lot of influences that were coming together. So this tiny town in upstate New York was hosting a music festival. It's now an iconic, it's a famous place. You can go there and visit. I never bothered. But there are people, they make like a pilgrimage. It's like Lahavdil. It's like a cultural Lahavdil, like cultural Uman. You know, people go there. I don't know if they say Tehillim. Whatever they do at Woodstock. But the people who organized this cultural phenomenon, this music festival, had no idea, they had no hasaga of what it was going to become. So there was a guy, the opening of the Woodstock Music Festival was headlined, was opened by a guy by the name of Richie Havens. Richie Havens was a musician, and he had a band. He was supposed to be the fifth act. He wasn't supposed to be the headline. He wasn't supposed to be the number one guy. But he was there. He got there on time. Meanwhile, 500,000 people were going to Woodstock. And if you ever driven in upstate New York, if you had the pleasure of the onus or of driving to a visiting day in the country, you know they can't handle 3 camp worth of Jews. Forget 500,000 people driving to Woodstock. Some of them were 100%, you know, like ready to drive, face, I don't know. So there was a humongous, enormous traffic jam for literally miles and miles. Nobody could get to Woodstock, to the site of the concert. So they get this guy, Richie Havens, they get him up there, and he plays 45 minutes an hour, and he's done with his band. He gets off the stage, and the Balabatim over there, they say to him, you have to encore. We have no musicians here. You're going back up. You have to go again. So he says, go back, okay. So he goes, Nachamal, goes for the encore. After the second, you know, he gets off, and they say to him, no. You go back, Nachamal. This guy, Richie Havens, and I shared the YouTube video with some. This guy was wearing like an orange, like hippie style thing. He did 9 encores. He played for 3 hours. 3 hours. Because there were no musicians. And he just had to keep going because there were hundreds of thousands of people. So by the end of the 9th encore, the guy had played every song he knew. There was mamish nothing left. And could you imagine playing for 3 hours? You could see on the video, he's dripping with sweat. And so he invents a song. He invents a song on the spot. And you watch the video and you could see the guy, his mamish, rotzitz v'shover. He's got nothing left. He's dripping with sweat. His fingers are probably calloused. There's probably nothing left. It's like a stub. And he just starts strumming on the guitar, and then he starts singing. And he repeats a few words over and over and over. And it's almost like it's haunting. And it became a shtickle, like an anthem for some people who went to Woodstock. So he's strumming on the guitar, going back and forth and back and forth. Then he starts singing, freedom! Freedom! He starts going over and over again. It's just screaming, freedom. And he keeps going over this refrain of freedom. And he says, sometimes I feel like a motherless child. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child. He's invoking a gospel, a Christian song from his youth that he's inventing on the fly. Sometimes I feel like a motherless child, or far away from home. And he's screaming, freedom, freedom, and everybody's like moving and clapping and singing. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone. I didn't think it was possible to put the lyrics in the Mar Makomos, but I'll just say it, Balpe. Sometimes I feel, he's screaming, like I'm almost gone. Sometimes I feel like I'm almost gone, a long, long way from home. And he tells everybody, clap your hands. You can imagine, like, it's like a little bit, it has that schmack of a gospel. A little bit. Clap your hands. He's telling everybody in Woodstock, clap your hands. All clapping their hands. Hundreds of thousands of people. Yeah, and he's freedom. He's screaming freedom. And then he says, I got a telephone in my bosom. And I can call him up from my heart. When I need my brother. When I need my mother. And he's screaming freedom, freedom. And he finishes with like a whole guitar solo. And he just like falls off the stage. So I have a chaver who was a prominent rav in a wonderful community for a long time, and he sent this to me. And he said, it's mamish very powerful, and I watch and it's taka very powerful. And I wondered if what this guy is expressing, what he's talking about, what he's feeling, is in some way a deep aspect of our Rosh Hashanah, of our Tzkiyas Shofar experience. I'll explain to you what I mean. But I think if we explore this together, we'll realize that part of us, maybe, is singing that song every single year, wordlessly, when we hear the shofar. Because if I were to ask you, simple question, how do you know that you blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah? How do you know that? Where does it say that?
Yovel.
What's that?
True, from Yovel.
That's right. So if you look, if you turn your page, Danny's Mechavin to the Gemara on the top of Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, which is pretty surprising to some, because you would think we are growing up since we're little kids that it says that Rosh Hashanah is the day of Shofar. It just says in the Pasuk, Yom Trua, where it says Zichron Trua, but doesn't say what a Trua is and what you use to create the sound of a Trua. So the Pasuk says on the top, Tana Rabbanon, says the Gemara Shoshana Daf Lamed Gimel Lamed Beis, Minayin Shebis Shofar. How do we know that a person fulfills the mitzvah, the kiyum of Yom Teruah, with a shofar? Talmud Lomar says the pasuk v'ha'avarta shofar Teruah, that you should sound or pass the shofar for a Teruah. Says the Gemara, ein li'ela b'yovel. How do I know that that's not just on Yovel? B'Rosh Hashanah minayin. Talmud Lomar says in pasuk b'chodesh hashvi. Chodesh Hashvi means? What's that? That's right. Well, almost. The seventh month. What is the seventh month? What's that?
Tishrei.
So because it says Taviru Shofar, because it says Shofar Trua, Vavarta Shofar Trua, and it says Bachodesh Hashvi, says the Gemara, Shein Talmud Lomar Bachodesh Hashvi didn't have to tell me that it's in the seventh month. Uma Talmud Lomar Bachodesh Hashvi, why does he have to tell me it's the seventh month? Shu Kol Trua Shel Chodesh Shvi Zeh Kaseh. All of the truas, all of the blowing that happened the seventh month, should be Zeh Kaseh. What is the reference to Yovel? Says the Pasuk here, if you look in Parshas Bahar, source number 3, V'sofar Telecha Sheva Shabsil Shonim, we have to count 7 years, and then Sheva Shonim Sheva Ba'amim, up to the seventh cycle of 7 years. How many? Teshav Arboim Shana, 49 years. What happens after that? Pasuk Tes, who wants to read?
Sorry.
Yep. Okay. Keep going. Beautiful. So there is a din, the Pasuk is telling us, there is a din of Tkiya Shofar and Yovel, that you should sound the shofar to create a trua in the seventh month on the 10th day. On Yom Kippur, you should blow the shofar. So when they blew the shofar on Yovel, it was on Yom Kippur. It was not on Rosh Hashanah. They blew it on Rosh Hashanah because it was Rosh Hashanah, but they had a second shofar blowing for Yom Kippur. When they blew the shofar on Yom Kippur, that was part of a whole set of reset activities that you would do. What would happen in Yom Kippur of Yovel? Anybody remember? That's right. Fields go back, servants go back. So as part of that process, you would blow the shofar. Great. So you blow the shofar, the fields go back to their owners, the slaves go free, right? Even a person, Rahman al-Islam, who made themselves into an Eved Nirtza, who they bore a hole in his ear because he wanted to remain an Eved, va'avodo li'olam, Pasuk says, Vavod al olam, the Gemara says, only until Yovel, right? We know this, the person goes free on Yovel. So it's interesting. The source, did we ever think about this? The source of Shofar on Rosh Hashanah is not from Rosh Hashanah. It's from this din of Bachodesh Hashvi that it comes from Yovel. And the truth is that it extends not just to the fact that you have to use a Shofar, but the Gemara Rosh Hashanah discusses, you had a couple of options, and sometimes you see this in different shuls, the different minhagim. I don't know what it's like here in Makor, what kind of shofar, but some people are very careful about this. I've gone to different places, let's say I was in two different shuls this week. One shul, they had the guy with the long, curly kotel situation. You know what I mean? Like, and that guy, you know, he's always, there is that guy. I don't know if you have one or two of those in the shul, Baruch Hashem. You have such people. They live for this. You know, they've been waiting the whole year to pull out. I don't know what animal this came from. I don't know. You've never seen national. You know what I'm talking about? Even if they don't have that, there is that guy. He's very excited, that guy. This is like his, he gets to shine this time of year. He pulls out the shofar, he's going all out. You don't have to tell him that the trua is only 9 blasts. It's usually like 19 or 29. He's very excited. And then, so that's a curly shofar. Then you have the guy from the other shul that I went to, has more of a simple shofar. So the truth is, today, most people are not makbid. They don't really have an insistence. But in the times of Chazal, people were much more sensitive about this, and that there was an affect that when you looked at the shofar, it has a certain feel to it. If the shofar is bent over, so the person who's blowing the shofar, the experience of the shofar, looked like it was an element of what we would call in Hebrew, hachna'a, submission. A person, they would feel like they're a little bit leaning over, a little bit sibrachin. And if it was straight, so then it has a different feel. So the Mishnah tells us Rosh Hashanah Daf Chavav, Shofar shel Rosh Hashanah, the shofar of Rosh Hashanah shel Ya'el Pashut. Ideally, the Mishnah says it's from a Ya'el, like a particular type of goat, which is Pashut, simple, not curly. Upiv, and the mouthpiece is Mitzupezov, it's surrounded with gold. And they would have, we don't have this bizman hazeh, but they would have 2 chatzotzros, the Mishnah says, on either side. The chatzotzros, these silver horns, min atzdadim, shtei chatzotzros min atzdadim, shofar marich, v'chatzotzros mekatzros. So they would blow the sound, the 3 horns would blow together, but the side ones, the guys who were blowing the silver trumpets, they would taper off, and only the shofar would remain. Because that's the ikar mitzvah sayom. However, when it comes to a tanis, it would be the reverse. When it came to tanios, they would use shel zcharim kfufin. They would have curled, because on a tanis we feel more broken in a certain sense. We feel a greater sense of achna, and it's the exact opposite because the mitzvah sayom is chatzotzos. But then the Mishnah has an interesting line. Says the Mishnah, shava hayovel Rosh Hashanah letzkiyah v'lebrachos. When it comes to not just the fact that you blow a shofar, but the style of the shofar and the brachos, the whole institution of tkiyah shofar and Rosh Hashanah is patterned after shofar shel yovel. And this is what the Rambam codifies for us right in the first halacha in the mitzvah of shofar. Mitzvah saseh shel Torah, last source on the page. Mitzvah saseh shel Torah l'shmoa truas hashofar b'Rosh Hashanah. It's a mitzvah to hear the sound, the trua of the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, Shene Amar, Yom Trua Yielachem. The shofar Shetokin Bo, Bain Barosh Hashanah, Bain Shelly, Bain Biyovel, Bain Habiyovel, Hukaren Hakfasim Hakafuf. And we have to use that. That's the Rambam's opinion, not for today. So not only is the institution of Tkia B'Shofar learned from Yovel, the actual style of shofar that you use is learned from Yovel. So maybe this is what we could add to the list from the Halakha Rav Sadia Gaon to the experience of shofar. And maybe this is the pshat now to understand what Richie Havens was trying to tell us. He's trying to tell Dore Doros. Shofar shel Yovel, what does Yovel symbolize? That's right. That's why, if you ever go, you take either your kids on a trip to Philadelphia, you go see the Liberty Bell. It says in Pasuk, on the Liberty Bell, Ukrasim Dror Ba'aretz L'chol Yoshveah. That's why it's called the Liberty Bell, because they put the Pasuk on the Liberty Bell. Yovel is about liberty. It's about freedom. So what is freedom? So maybe at first, freedom feels like the freedom to do whatever we want. Freedom to do whatever we want, dress however we want, act however we want. Freedom can mean a lot of hefkeris, yoma de pagra. But maybe after an hour or 2 hours or 3 hours of that type of quote-unquote freedom, there comes a havana, there comes an understanding that that's not really being free. What do you have at the end of that? This guy standing on the stage after 3 hours, he's finished entertaining everybody. He's finished singing all the songs for everybody. So what comes out from a person when they have a little omek, that's the last drop. And he starts calling out. He says, you know what's freedom? After all the mishigas, all the craziness, sometimes we just feel like a motherless child. The truth is, we've been going after all of these things that were illusory, that they thought would make us feel good, that they would numb the pain, or they would be a distraction, or they would make us whatever. But at the end of the day, sometimes a person just is crying out because they feel like a motherless child. Sometimes they need a brother. They need a telephone in their heart, and they realize that they can call him up from their heart. We spend a whole year, and a lot of times we get distracted. And we pursue a lot of things that we think, and maybe in the moment, are appealing. And Baruch Hashem, we live in a very emancipated world where we have access to a lot of things. So we do a lot of things, and our goof, it tells us, you know, you got to do this, and we got to do that. But comes the freedom of Rosh Hashanah, the freedom of Tkiyah Shofar, is that it is a sound, it is a wordless cry that we are calling out to the Ribbono Shel Olam. We say to him, look, you know what? You know what we really need? It's the freedom to be ourselves. It's the freedom to be tapped into my neshama. It's the cry of the heart. It's the telephone in my bosom, and I can call him up from my heart when I need my brother, my mother. It's the sound of leaving the confusion of the world and letting everything go for a minute. Right? It's exactly, it's mamash lahavdil elef alfei havdalos. It's that moment in Woodstock where this guy finally let go of all the cheshbonos and all the people and all the traffic and all the everything. All he had was this moment where he realized, sometimes I feel like a motherless child. We come to the Ribbono Shel Olam, we had so many cheshbonos. We've managed through slichas halavai, we should be zocha to get there. And we got a lot of stuff we've been carrying with us for a whole year. And you know what we say when we come to Yovel? We say all of the earrings, all of the craziness, we just let it go. We let it go. Cross and drawer. That's what we're doing for ourselves. The Tkiyah Shofar is the call of freedom that says to us, just let it go. That's why we're calling out to the Ribbono Shel Olam Kiviyachol. Because now we're free from all the cheshbonos and everybody looking at us. Some people have the minig. I don't know if you ever see this. Some people have the minig that they cover their head with talis. Why do they do that? Not because I don't think anybody thinks that Tkiyah Shofar requires atifa. They do that because they don't want to look at anybody else and they don't want anybody else to look at them. Because sometimes I feel like a motherless child. I just need to connect to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I have to stop thinking what the person next to me is thinking and what they look like and what their kids are doing and what my kids are doing and what everybody else is doing. I want to be free of all of that. Yeah.
So isn't that a form of achna in a sense? Like if what you're saying is that I'm now, quote, free to not pursue my base passions and whatever form of licentiousness I perform. That's the standard version of freedom. Now I'm free to submit myself to the Ribbono Shel Olam. So wouldn't it make more sense in this context to say use the long shofar when you're saying is in essence the essential freedom is to be machnia myself.
Excellent. So the question was, in this model, that by being in touch with our inner self, with our neshama, which, by the way, I think it's interesting, just as an aside to your point, you know, we had a lot of discussions over the last 2 years about Zoom Megillah and Zoom Havdalah and Zoom this. A lot of the halachic discourse about this comes back to the mitzvah of shofar, because the mitzvah of shofar, the din in Rosh Hashanah, is where we distinguish between the kol shofar and what the Mishnah calls the kol havara, the echo. So is Zoom the kol or is it the echo? So it's dafka in the inyan of Rosh Hashanah, and we're over time, so I want to be makatzer, but it's dafka in the inyan of the shofar where we are looking for our authentic self. I'm not looking for a Zoom of myself. I'm not looking for an echo of myself. I need to hear just the shofar. Not a Zoom shofar, not a recorded shofar, not a havara, which was the Mishnaic equivalent of some of those things. But anyway, so the question is, when I tap into that real inner neshama, how am I feeling? And the answer is probably I'm feeling two things. Probably there's an element of me that feels, and that's why there are multiple sounds, there's an element of me that feels broken. Because I feel like I'm mamish like a motherless child. I'm so far from their bullshit. Look what happened to me over my life. So I feel a little bit broken. And that brokenness sometimes is like, oy, it's like a groaning. Ah, man, I've finally come back to myself and I'm like groaning. And sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, 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 yeah. It's like a wailing. So that's what the Gemara calls genuche gonach and yulula yola, the two sounds of trua. But what precedes those and what follows those is always the tkia. There's an element of like, you know what? Nothing's holding me back now. In this moment, in this here and now, when no one's looking at me, when I don't even have to say anything, because, you know, I'm just saying just that sound, the wordless cry, there's something that's very elevated. And that's probably why there were different opinions about the style shofar. For some people, it's more of a feeling of brokenness. But for some people, it's more of a feeling of hisalus, of malchus, of internal malchus. And so probably different people experience it differently, but we have an element of both. And that's why you have the tkiyas, but also the shvarim truas. But it's novea from this inner yesod that we can finally free ourselves. We can take a step back from even the words that we have to say. And we just have that telephone in our heart. I'll end with one maisa. That's exactly this point. Chassidim sometimes say a mashal for the tkiya shofar that there was a king. He's always a king. So there was a king. He was a wonderful king. He was very benevolent. He was very caring, very thoughtful. And he had a son. But the son was a shtickle nar. And he did some stupid things, which is what most adolescents do. Some of us have been adolescents. Some of us still are adolescents. Some of us have adolescents living in our home. We know it's a klal gadol v'yadua baruch menusa. Adolescents do dumb things. So, of course, the prince, he's an adolescent, so he does dumb things. He ends up lost some forest somewhere. He's running away from animals. He's in the forest, so his clothes get torn. He gets put up by, you know, some forest man, some guy who's living in a hovel. Exactly. So he spends so much time in the forest that he forgets what it was like to live in civilization, what it was like to live in the palace, how they spoke in the palace. And this forest guy, he doesn't speak the language that they speak in civilization. He speaks Echbes, whatever language they speak in the forest. You have to find what that is. I don't know. But meanwhile, one day, the guy is walking, and now he doesn't look like a prince. He certainly doesn't feel like a prince. But he hears in the distance that there is this noise. And he recognizes, and it's the sound of a chariot. And he recognizes because intuitively we have certain base memories that we always hold on to. It's like, that's a chariot. I hear the wheels. He recognizes that sounds like his old past. It's the palace. It's the king. It's his father. But he has no clue. How's he going to get back to the street, to the highway? He's lost in the forest. And he doesn't even know how to speak to his father anymore because he's been so lost living with Jungle Man that he doesn't know where to go. So all he figures, all he knows how to do is to scream. He goes, ah! Starts screaming. And the father's in the chariot and he hears, he says, I know that voice. He says to the Balagala, he says, stop right now. We got to get the guys. We got to get some machetes. We got to cut down this forest until we find that kid, because I know that my son is in there. It's a wordless tefillah. It's true. It's all of those things that Rav Sadia Gaon means. But at its core, it's this telephone that we're just crying out. Because it's the beginning. It's Rosh Hashanah. We don't even have the words to rebuild that relationship yet with the Ribono Shel Olam. But it's a place to start. And having Yovel as the model gives us the heter. It's matir asurim. It frees us from all of the craziness and say, you know what? I don't have to worry about all of that, what it was. I'm free from that. And I could just reconnect to my inner true self, to the Ribono Shel Olam. Because at the end of the day, sometimes we all feel like a motherless child. Even when for so long we've been chasing a lot of other things, we all come back to that Nakuda. And that is maybe that gift of Rosh Hashanah may be the greatest gift that the Ribono Shel Olam gives us of all. It's the ability to reconnect to him with that wordless feeling. So I wish us all a ksiva chesima tova, good gebench yor. Thank you for the opportunity. Hatzlacha this morning. And I look forward to more opportunities, Habo Aleinu Latova, to learn together. All the best, Zagazin. Thank you.